Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy radio show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So we had a couple of assignments from Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. All the troubles of humanity. Come from not knowing how to sit still. As meditators, we surely realize sitting still is not easy. In fact, the practice of sitting down and sitting still puts us pretty quickly in touch with all the troubles of humanity. I don't want to. I can't stand this. I hate it. I want to quit. I want to do something else. This is too hard. Fortunately, it doesn't take long for those of us who stick with sitting practice to figure out that the misery is not in the sitting, but rather in the incessant suffering-producing conversation in the head. Now we can turn attention away from what we're not sitting with, the misery in the head, and turn attention to what we are sitting with, the wisdom, love, and compassion animating us. Today, each time you sit down, remember to turn attention away from the troubling yammer in the head and direct attention to the trouble-free zone of this here now. Record and listen. And then on the 28th, it's never too late to do nothing. Such fun, so much wisdom. It's never too late. This is a true statement for all time. It is always now. Early and late are fallacious notions leading to unhelpful conclusions. It's never too late to do nothing. If you find you must do something, at least let that something be nothing. Today, practice being a know-nothing, do-nothing. Record and listen. And on the 29th, there's nothing in the world I dislike. In this whole world, there is no thing I dislike. What a statement. Such a koan. In this whole world, there is no thing. There is no I. With no I and no thing, how could dislikes be? Today, find the little gap that becomes apparent when conditioned mind crashes to a halt in its inability even to consider such clarity. Record and listen.
So, are you there?
I can hear you, yes. Yes.
On Saturday, I had a Sabbath day, excuse me, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I was definitely a know-nothing, do-nothing, and it was glorious. I would recommend it heartily to anyone who hasn't tried it.
Yes, and having been one of those persons, people who have tried it, I couldn't concur more. All right, here's our first caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? First caller? First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? All right. I guess our first caller
next is... first caller.
Yes, let's go to our next first caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini and Sherry. It's Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hi. Gosh, it was all those three quotes were awesome. I was calling to also being someone who's done that. I also concur. I read your blog over the weekend, and I think it fits in with all the quotes. And I just wanted to call and tell you I want to join your conscious, compassionate action team, whatever you're calling it.
Great.
Yes, because it does get us out of the misery of the head, right? I mean, you know, it's like
yes.
There's so much that can cause that misery right now. And I've noticed it, and when you shared all of that in your blog, I was just like, oh, gosh, it was so awesome because I could feel all the things the people said that you mentioned, and I also have been choosing presence, and mostly unconditional love, I think, is the main focus. focus that I've been working on. And then when you talked, I've heard you talk about it on some of the radio shows, and I just, it just feels like such, I feel so enthusiastic and passionate about that, I guess is the way I would describe it.
Oh, great. So one of the things that fits for me in that, Renee, is that we all, I think, in a lucid moment, we can admit that we are good people trying to do the best we can. Mm-hmm. And we're not always as successful, certainly as the voices in our head would say, but even in our hearts, we know that there's room for improvement. And mm-hmm. I was just looking at how I suspect that's true for everybody, and that everything that everybody is doing is an attempt to be loved, to get love, to feel love, to find love, right? To be approved and appreciated, to be the right person. Now, we might look at what somebody else is doing and say, how in the world could you be misguided enough to think that that is going to? But when we are in those places in ourselves, other people could certainly look at us and say, now that is misguided. And yet we know deep in our hearts that that is our motivation. And so in realizing that, I think it becomes kind of much simpler to simply say, okay, let's just choose love. Let's just choose love. Doesn't really matter what anybody's doing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that we don't do the best we can to express the love we feel in ways that are meaningful to us. Right? Because that's really important. But we don't have to waste time speculating about what's motivating somebody else. We can just guess. It's the same thing motivating us.
Yes. And what drops in as you, it is exciting. And what drops in as you say that is, so throughout my practice, when I started, you know, I was really identified with conditioning, like everyone. And there would be things that would be said by you or other Sangha members, or I'd read a quote. And I would just wake up, you know, I would wake up and go, oh, my gosh, I never thought of that. That is love. That is what I want to do. You know, it was like these things that would just come in. And I think that's you know, what it's like you're in this particular thinking, like conditioned mind, and then something drops in of what you could actually do, because turning it into action, I think, is where a lot, at least I struggle with that, like, okay, what is the action? And so what I'm exploring with that unconditional love is being present to know what that is, you know, and to not to just, you know, I mean, conditioned mind would tell me to do all kinds of things, you know, to with this current environment. And I know they're not right, you know, I mean, or they're not love, you know, they're hate and anger and frustration and all these things. And the love is a completely different waking up process.
Yes. And what you're saying is that's so important. Love will guide you. Love will guide you in your actions. Right? So it's that know nothing, do nothing, right? We don't need to engage with conditioned mind at all. The heart, love, will guide us. And it will be simple and straightforward and obvious and fulfilling. Because love is.
I love it. And sitting still and recording and listening is what helps you see what that is.
Yes, exactly. It enables us to see, to hear.
Awesome.
Oh, it's a good deal, isn't it?
Well,
thank you, Renee.
I am ready and willing to practice love in whatever way.
Yes, to the very best of our ability all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Thank you. Go happy.
Go happy.
Thank you, Renee. To the best of our ability to practice love all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's such a it's such a, it resonates so much because at the bottom of our heart, it's all we really want.
Yes. Yes. Oh, beautifully stated. Yeah. And all kinds of, there might be all kinds of conditioning arguing with it, but in exactly the way you said, at the deepest part of our heart, it resonates. We know it's so. We know it's all we've ever wanted.
Mm. And it's the Rumi poem, right? It's not that we aren't love. It's just that we have to let go of the barriers.
Yes.
That we've built against it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Shall we hear from our next caller, Sherry?
Please.
Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hey, Sherry and Ashwini. It's Jen in Rhinebeck.
Hey, Jen.
Hello. Oh, this is a great conversation so far. I was seeing different things weave together. The digital Sabbath is something I've been so interested in doing. You're just taking a Sabbath from, you know, devices and screens.
Uh-huh.
And I still haven't been able to completely put that in place. There always seems to be something snapping in to have to look at the phone for. And yeah. But thinking of that with, you know, with the last conversation about sort of choosing love and about the conversation about doing nothing and knowing nothing. I'm not even sure what I want to say, but somehow the three all seem really related to me.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because as Renee was indicating at the end of that, it's in that doing nothing, knowing nothing, that love can speak to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? That's kind of the way in. You know, it's mm-hmm. so difficult for us to hear that still small voice because there is so much yammering all the time.
Yeah.
Meet you this, meet you that. What? Well, what about this? Well, what if that happened? Well, yeah, but you could take care of this. But, you know, and it's not always screaming at us, but there's that habitual urge to do.
Mm-hmm.
And attention goes to that, and we miss the guidance that love is there to offer us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had
a little
specific possibility for you.
Okay.
Yeah,
please.
So one of the things you can do is tell somebody, I'm having a Sabbath. I'm having a no devices Sabbath, and I'm going to let people know to contact you if there's an emergency. Will that be okay?
So oh, that's a good idea.
Network of people, right?
Yeah.
A network of people. And so they know it, people know, and so you can get past all that. Well, but what if, you know, what if your aged hooty-hooty, you know, all of those arguments. And so, well, then they'll call. It's like being on retreat. Then there's an emergency number. They'll contact
them. There's an emergency
them.
Number.
Yeah, I don't need to worry about anything.
Yeah, it's... And that one's not such a big worry for me. It's more like there always seems to be something going on, like arrangements that are happening that day that I need to be communicating with somebody about. So there's just an opportunity there, I think, for making all of those arrangements ahead of time and and saying, I'm not going to be on my device that day. And
that's right, being a role model, right,
mm-hmm.
for the people who are going, I could never do that. And then they think, Jen did it, and I didn't die.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I can do it, and nobody else will.
And also just being okay with, like, not, like, with missing something if something gets missed, you know? Like if,
Especially if you're having a really good time, right? If you're miserable and other people are having a good time, that's hard to miss. But if you're having the best time a human being can have and you miss something, all you wish is that they're having as good a time as you're having.
Yes. That's so true.
Yeah.
And I've been really seeing how this you know, and I don't even have that busy of a lifestyle, but I still feel this attachment to sort of staying on top of things, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And just seeing how that's interfering with, there's places in my life that I'm looking to hear that, you know, still small voice. I'm looking to hear life guidance and I can't hear it. I'm like completely muddled around these areas. And it's, you know, and I see that it's like, it's not even that I'm busy thinking or talking about those areas necessarily. It's just that there's just too much busy thinking and talking.
Yes,
happening.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. and it's really important to see that's that. Right. And then now there's the habit that we need to break. And mm-hmm. and then that's all there is to it. We see that it's a bamboozle, basically. You know, you need to be thinking about this all the time because, and then we get to that place of why? Why do I need to be thinking about this all the time?
Well, yeah.
Actually, there isn't a good reason. Okay, then I'm not going to think about it all the time. If there was a good reason, I would. But there isn't. So I'm not going to do that.
Right. And then I see how that really then leaves the opportunity for not just hearing life guidance, but I don't know, like just being okay with whatever that guidance is, just being okay,
freedom.
Freedom, exactly. Freedom, yes. And freedom from the voices. Like one of the pieces of content I'm dealing with right now is there has a cat has showed up in my life and she's decided to move into my house. And she just a stray cat showed up months ago and now she's moved in. And I don't really want a cat right now. And so there's been this, you know, huge set of material for conditioning to take and just be like, of course you have to have this cat. She showed up. She's meant to be here. Like you can't resist what is. Like it uses all the language of practice, you know, like this is what's happening. You need to accept it.
And when a cat shows up that's tall enough and with that ability to open doors and come inside, then there's really nothing you can do.
Exactly.
If that cat doesn't have that ability, then you really need to be suspicious about what's going on, right? About that setup of, yeah.
Yeah,
and
I'm
happy. You open the door, you make a bed for her in the corner, and then listen to a conversation about how I don't want this cat. Well, you have to now. Because, you know, it's like, oh, boy. I think I got mad.
Exactly. And so I really do feel like I want to do a lot of traveling next year, including time at the monastery, and I don't want to have a cat right now. And so I keep trying to come back to this place of like, maybe I'm just a temporary passing pass through for this cat. After a lot of sleuthing, it seems like she was abandoned by a neighbor that moved away. She needs some help right now.
You can help her find a good home.
I can help her.
Huh?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and I can't do that if I'm like so busy stuck in listening to
all of the drama. Feeling bad about and worrying about and there's a problem with. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so that's an interesting connection too. Like I can't do the compassionate action, quote unquote, on her behalf if I'm busy with all of this conversation. So, yeah.
That's right. And having a sense that that's the point of all that conversation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah.
You too have fun.
Thank you,
now.
Jen.
Okay.
You know, Sherry, there was so much in that conversation, especially about the digital Sabbath, but the thing that dropped in was in the latter part of the conversation around conscious, compassionate action. Because I think what you were pointing at is all of what arises from a deep impulse of caring, which then gets mutated by the conditioned conversation. So if I you know, in the story of the cat, it's illustrated so well that, that the caring would imply that I have to be the one who has to take care of the cat, or I'm a wrong, bad person. And if I don't want to, I'm a wrong, bad person. But that ability to care can take so many forms, which is to assist someone else to care. I don't have to be the person who has to do the caring necessarily. But that option is not considered to be caring, because if I were the right person, then I would be the one to care. And I find myself often get caught in that confusion of, if I have a preference which says there are many reasons why I can't do this thing, then I should do it because that's the right person thing to do. If I was truly a caring person, then that's what I would do. But to recognize that that caring impulse can be an impersonal impulse is just so liberating.
Yes. Well, and what you're illustrating with that is how I need to do X, Y, or Z in order to be the right person. It's such a perspective of separation.
Yes.
And we can see, then, that it's an ego perspective. It's up to me. It's not. Mm-hmm. We're not all in this together. There are not all. It's not all of life manifesting all of life. It's me. I've got to do it. It's up to me. I have to take charge. Mm-hmm. I have to be the person in order to be the right person. And again, realizing that, yes, it is liberating because it's a we situation. It's a non-separate reality, and life has the ability to handle all of life.
Right, and that the cat has come into my life to assist me to realize that I can facilitate a different way of caring. It's not that the cat that needs me, but the cat that's giving me something.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. A little furry, still small voice.
Yes, a little bodhisattva. Mm-hmm. All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Hello.
This is Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. It's great to call in. I thought this morning, I thought, I'm just going to call in so I'm more here than I would be
there
otherwise, and it certainly has that impact. And
it does, doesn't it? It's such a centering activity.
It's just like, oh, here I am. Oh, this is great. Yeah. What an easy way to get here. Without all the struggle and hours of meditation, and God only knows what it would take otherwise. So, but I had this experience in listening to the conversation now. It kind of reinforces it this weekend of, I was thinking about the whole thing about the ego and, you know, egoic structure and the voice that's always talking to me. And I thought, wow, what would it be like to live without that voice? And I had this image of making a t-shirt that said, alert, I am running through the world unsupervised by ego, just like unsupervised, because that voice is, that's what it's constantly doing, you know, don't do this, you should do that.
Watching you.
Yeah, and then on the back of the t-shirt, it would say, P.S., I don't know. You know, it's like both of them for me, admitting I don't know and there's nothing, goes with this letting go of being supervised by ego, that I need to listen in order to live, like you were saying, in more of a state of love. And I was like, wow, in a way, it's like letting love be my boss instead of the voices.
Trusting life to live you perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I had a dream about being in this car that was going downhill and there was no one driving it, but somehow I knew it would get to where it was going safely. There was not a problem. I was okay. We were all. So I just love it. It moves me just to even talk about it. And I so want to stay in that place of feeling that.
Yes. Yes. And you know, Susan, that's the whole trick of the whole thing right there. You want to.
Yeah.
Right? Long as it's a should, you have to, you're the right person. If you do, you're the wrong person. It's just ego's got it. But I see the difference, and I know which one I choose. I'm going for it.
Yeah, because ego, it's like you've said it over and over, and Ashwini too can, like, see spirituality and make it super ego. Like, oh, if you're spiritual, you do this. And, you know, like Jen was talking about, instead of, yeah, this is how it feels. And it has nothing to do with the language of ego. So, yeah, I may go in the T-shirt business, I think. Every day wear a T-shirt that reminds me, kind of lets the world know if I look really strange, I'm unsupervised.
That's right. Life is living me perfectly, right? And then, and then people can ponder that one, right? Wow. Okay, what is that?
I may be homeless, but I'm at home. You know, it's whatever.
That's
that
right.
Kind of thing.
Exactly.
I'm in love with not knowing. Anyway, I can see license plates and bumper stickers in my future. Anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Yeah.
Such a delicious
and great
feeling.
Fun. Yeah, and great fun. And if all else fails, you can record and listen. Right? You can record about it, entertain yourself endlessly, and then listen to your. To what life is creating for you.
Yeah, I actually saw the other day, because I was laughing so hard, I thought, oh, maybe the way to enlightenment, or whatever you call it, it's laughter. It's like a moment of being out of the voices and ego, and, you know, laughter is such a way in for me, you know. And we all know there's nothing funny about spiritual life. You know, there's nothing humorous or joyful or fun. So it's really
It's grim, isn't it? It's awful. Not having an ego and being living a spiritual life. Yeah, that's depressing. And of course, the vast majority of people deeply, deeply believe that. Right? The only way to have fun is to drink alcohol, do drugs, watch television. And sports. That is the way to the juicy life. And the rest of us, we are suffering and just too foolish to know it. We'll be liberated from our bonds sooner or later. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're thinking about that thing that the Buddha said, you know, life has suffering and people get myself in the beginning too, wrapped around, oh, Buddhism's all about suffering, and I'm thinking, why are there so many statues of happy Buddhas then? They're the laughing Buddha.
That's right. That's the important point. What the Buddha taught is how he ends suffering. He pointed out that they're suffering, and as you say, people get hung up right there. I've been criticized once or twice for being too lighthearted about such an important subject. But the Buddha taught us how to end suffering. That's what we want to focus on. And laughter is a huge part of it, isn't it? Because life is joy.
Yeah, and actually one of the things that drew me to you and to this path was listening to the open air and that laughter and that kind of levity and you know, it's like love. It's that same path. So I really appreciate it and, you know, it's a way
in. People who are in love laugh a lot.
Yeah, because everything else is so absurd. And that would be us. Okay, well, I just want to say I'm
all right. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm having a good time. All right. Thank
Happy
you.
T-shirting.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Susan. Sure, we have about 2 minutes. Shall we try to get another caller on, or shall we just look at our
phone? Because we won't.
Yes.
So I'll go on and on and on and on, and then you'll have to,
We'll just laugh a little. And the assignment is very apropos to that conversation.
Oh, good.
Because it reads, for every minute you are angry, you lose 60 seconds of happiness. Are those really our two choices? A lot of conditioned mind nitpicking comparisons could be indulged if we noodled about our various emotional options. What about scared and passionate? How about upset and enthusiastic? Years are wasted as conditioned mind parses imaginary subtitles of human experience. Instead, we can look at the question from the perspective of gone, identified with ego I, and here in non-separate reality.
Are those just two more sides of a duality? No. Here contains gone. Presence contains ego. Is it wrong to be gone suffering instead of here happy? Not at all. Today, notice when you're gone suffering and when you're here happy. RL about the here happy.
We can even look for here happy, huh?
Yes, we absolutely can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, when we look for it, we are here happy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. Talk about hidden in plain sight, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Ashwini. Thanks, everybody. Treasure yourself.
And go happy. Here happy.
And go happy.